Audio from the March 2011 International Women's Day Tour of Dublin.
All right, so we're here outside the passport office in Dublin to talk about women in poverty. The reason we chose this place was to highlight the fact that even though women are more likely to experience poverty than men are, they risk experiencing poverty even more if they are migrant women. Immigrants who come here face a bigger, larger risks when it comes to poverty than Irish-born women do. There are particular problems for women who immigrate here when they want to, for example, seek jobs. If they get the right to stay here and they lose the job they had, it can be hard to stay in Ireland because they have to find another job or face deportation. There's more info about that in this little booklet that you got. Hopefully, there's more of them here. And I'm going to speak a little bit about the historical aspects of poverty in Ireland for women. Speak a little bit about Nana Nagel, who was a woman who worked for women in poverty. She was born into a well-off family in County Cork in 1718. She was refused education because she was Catholic and the family didn't want to convert to Church of Ireland. So they sent her to France, as was customary for families who could afford it at the time. And she received her education there. She moved back to Ireland and lived in Dublin for a while, but eventually moved back to Ballygriffin in County Cork, where she was born, due to several deaths in the family. Eventually, because of her feeling she had a religious calling, she moved back to France and entered a convent. But as time went on, she felt like she should move back to Ireland and work with poor people, so she did. And she moved back to Cork, where she joined up with a couple of like-minded women, a very small group that had little or no money, who worked to set up schools. They eventually managed to set up a school for poor children, for poor girls in Cork. And it wasn't for long where they managed to open a second one. And as I said, they were largely underfunded. They didn't have any money a lot of times. So it said that Nana Nagel herself would actually dress up as a beggar woman to go out and try to get funds for the schools. Because she was from a well-off family and they didn't cut her off completely, she managed to get some funds when an uncle of her died. So she got a large inheritance, which she used to funnel almost all the money into the schools that they ran. She continued to work with the poor, especially with girls, opening up schools, doing charitable social activities until her death in 1784. She and a few other women managed to successfully set up their own order in Cork to work with these issues. Ironically enough, especially considering how she is used as a symbol for the good that could be done by religious people, the Catholic Church actually shut a lot of their activities down because they weren't in keeping with the church rules. So the order, for example, couldn't go out to work with prostitutes and women out in the field. They had to be restricted to the convent and couldn't leave the convent. So they could only stay there and do educational things for girls. And one of the people that were active at the same time as Nana Nagel here in Dublin was Teresa Mullally. She was a Dubliner who was also born in 1728. She founded orphanages here and opened schools in Dublin for poor Catholic girls at a time when that was against the law. And she did so up until her death in 1803. Now, at this time, due to heavy urbanization, people moving in from the country to countryside to the cities, due to domestic decline in production, there was a large upswing in the number of prostitutes around, and a lot of the women would prostitute themselves to be able to provide for their children. And as a kind of response to this, one of the things that happened was that a thing called Magdalen asylums started to appear. This was a thing that was kind of imported from the evangelical rescue movement in the United Kingdom. And the idea was to kind of pick up these girls who had fallen into prostitution and try to rehabilitate them and give them a trade that they could learn so they could enter into society. I think the first one was that was open in Ireland was open on Leeson Street in 1767. It was founded by Lady Arabella Denny. And this was exclusively for Protestant girls. Now, as time grew, they were actually, these asylums, most of them managed by the Catholic Church, even though they weren't directly funded. So a lot of times they would have little or no money. So the conditions would be pretty bad for the girls working in these asylums. And as time grew, they started to look more like prisons than rehabilitation centers. And what would happen was that a lot of times family members would request that girls be or women be taken care of, and these family members would a lot of time be men. So what they would do would be not to only request that a girl who'd fallen into prostitution or something like that be taken care of, but also maybe a girl who was promiscuous or that they felt needed to be in this sort of place. Girls could be sent to these asylums just for being too pretty. What would happen in these asylums was that they would be forced to work many hours a day, manual labor, and obey strict rules like no talking, for example, and would be encouraged to repent and beg forgiveness for their sins. Now, sad to say, when these asylums started to disappear, a lot of it wasn't really due to resistance, but more because a lot of stuff that was done by these women in the asylums could be taken over by, for example, washing machines. But they weren't even completely gone until the 20th century. I'm going to close by talking a little about the development that's been taking place during the 20th century for women in poverty. As women have gained more access to the labor market, thanks to having better access to education, improvements in family planning, because of the abolition of the marriage bar for women in public service jobs, as Sinead spoke about, and stronger equality legislation, the employment rate for women in Ireland has gone from 26.4% in 1961 to 60.5% in 2008. And women's earnings has gone from 47% in 1969 to 86% in 2006. So this figure is comparable to the EU average, where women earn on average 17.4% less than men for every hour worked for the same job. Now, this gender pay gap is partly due to the fact that women continue to be concentrated in less value jobs and positions than men, even though women, as we know, are very highly educated. And women are also more likely to work part-time and to interrupt careers for family reasons, which, of course, impacts on pay, career advancement, and accumulated pension rights. And because women still make less money than men and live longer, they're more likely to end up in poverty when they're older. Now, most of the work that's done to combat poverty in Ireland is done by small local groups with little or no funds, as it was back in the day. And despite the EU being instrumental in getting through some of the equality legislation that has benefited Ireland, it's still the grassroots organizations that are to thank for the advancements that are made. Now, there's still a standing problem of people refusing to accept the gender aspect of the issue of poverty. So even though a lot of advancements have been made, especially in the past few decades, a lot still remains to be done. Now, combating poverty is, of course, something that's hard to do, but as we've learned through time, you can't really do it through charity work. You have to actually try to do something about the structural gender inequality in society and try to fight that on all fronts, not just strictly policy matters like economics. It has to be fought in the workplace, in the unions, in education, health services, and, of course, in our private relationships. Thank you.
This audio was recorded on the March 20th, 11th International Women's Day Walking Tour of Dublin. The tour was organised by Choice Ireland, Lashback and VAG. For more information, see Article 99130 on indymedia.ie.